so great until I saw the city.
Welcome back to Straight from the Source with Michael Russo. Thanks, as always, for tuning in. My guest today, Billy Guerin, the Wild general manager, three-time Olympian, assistant GM for the USA Olympic hockey team. Hopefully, we don't know yet 100% that the NHLers will be going to Beijing next February. Hopefully, we'll find out here by the end of the month. Bill has also won 4 Stanley Cups, 2 as an executive with the Pittsburgh Penguins, 2 as a player. He's in the USA Hockey Hall of Fame. 6 most goals, actually, in NHL history. For U.S.-born players with 429, 8th most power play goals with 130. Also, 10 hat tricks in his career, 7 different teams that he scored a hat trick with. That's an NHL record. So thought it would be a great time to get him on with the playoffs right around the corner. By the time you're listening to this podcast, you might know who the Wild are playing in the first round. The Wild will find out on Thursday night. If Colorado wins, the Wild will play the Vegas Golden Knights in the first round of the playoffs, starting on the road, either Sunday or Monday. That you might know by the end of today, too, because the NHL is supposed to put out its alternate schedules at some point today, I believe. If Colorado loses, the Wild will play the Avalanche in the first round of the playoffs. The Wild will start on the road. If they play the Avalanche, it'll be the 4th time in postseason history that they play the Avs. The Wild have won 2 of those, both Game 7-type victories. The low seed in this playoff matchup between Colorado and Minnesota has won all 3 series in the past. And obviously, if the Wild play the Vegas Golden Knights, it would be the first time in history. Not that we're rooting, but don't you think I deserve to go to Vegas? I might be rooting for the Avs tonight, I'll just say. Hopefully, you'll enjoy this podcast with Bill. We get in on a lot of things. We'll talk about expansion. We'll talk about, where he sees the state of the team. We'll talk about why Matt Boldy hasn't been called up. We'll talk about Kaprizov and things like that. The one thing that Bill really doesn't want to get into, it's obviously a delicate subject, is Zach Parise. So, we sort of touch on it, but very, very, very little. That will obviously be a topic for after the season. I mean, Zach Parise has been scratched 3 games in a row. My gut says that he'll probably play in tonight's regular season finale, but who knows if he starts the playoffs with the Wild, get out of this game healthy. That's what it's become this year. It's amazing what's happened to Zach, 36 years old, last year led the Wild in goal scoring, entered the season as the left wing on the Kaprizov-Bukestad line to start the season. And then I think Bonino eventually wound up at the center position, but Parise stayed there. And it just never worked, and he slowly but surely fell down the lineup. And then he, what he says was a false positive, what he believes is a false positive for COVID-19. But either way, he hit the threshold that the league had to put him in protocol, and he missed a couple weeks. And he comes back, and first of all, the first game back, he's really a healthy scratch. He was only playing that night if Luke Johnson was taken off waivers. He wasn't, so Zach didn't play that game. But then Zach finally got back in the lineup, started playing well. I think points and 6 points in 6 games, maybe 4 goals in 5 games. And then his ice time started to take a turn for the worse. And now he's in a point where he hasn't scored his 200th goal with the Wild yet in 9 straight games. He hasn't had a point. And it's just hard to see. And you got to figure that this offseason, this is going to have to come to a head. He's got 4 years left on his deal. I don't know, for his own sanity, if he can continue to be this way. I mean, it's just amazing what has happened to him this year. Taken off the power play 7 minutes a night, he became Luke Johnson waiver insurance. And now he's being probably put into the final game of the regular season as insurance to keep somebody else from getting healthy. So, it's a shame what's happened here. But obviously Dean Evason and Billy Guerin are going with the lineup that they feel at least, gives them the best ability to win on a nightly basis. We'll see, if that changes here with Zach, but I've got to think that this is a very, very tough time for him right now. Team had a pretty good homestand, a lot of exciting games in that homestand against teams like St. Louis, Vegas, and Anaheim. Then they go to St. Louis on Wednesday night, and they lose 4-0. They were way too loose in their own end, felt like they were in sort of do not get hurt mode, but they've made a lot of the similar mistakes that they've made lately. And then offensively, for the first time since March 20th, they were shut out, but they had plenty of chances to get goals against Ville Husso, and maybe it's a different game if they get goals early in that game. The other little concern here is Cam Talbot, another game where he gave up 4 goals. And I know that, he made a lot of great saves, and he felt like it wasn't your typical four-goal against game for a goaltender. But this is now six straight games that he's given up at least three goals in a game. He's given up 24 in his last six games, and he's probably not getting the start in the season finale. I would assume Kaapo Kähkönen is. So he's going into the playoffs, not playing his best hockey in the Wild. Remember, one reason why they feel that this year is going to be different in the postseason beyond the fact that they even have Kirill Kaprizov in their lineup is that their goaltending has been much, much better this year with both Talbot and Kähkönen. So they're going to really need against either the top scoring team in the NHL or the third best scoring team in the NHL, Colorado or Vegas, they're going to need their goalie to be very, very good. And so the Wild will be relying on Talbot to get back on track. The other story, and again, if you're not a subscriber to The Athletic, please go to theathletic.com/straightfromthesource to get in for $3.99 per month. I'll spend that, double that probably today on a couple of Americanos. So hopefully you'll join. But once there's been a lot of really cool features in the last couple of weeks, but also a lot of gut-wrenching features. The one I wrote on Pierre Roscoe and his relationship with Stefan Provo last week really was one of the most touching stories and heartwarming stories I think I've ever written, and it's one of the stories I'm most proud of. The story that I wrote on today that I hope everybody reads is, today is amazingly, the 10-year anniversary of the death of Derek Bougard. And, he lived a mile from me in downtown Minneapolis, as all Wild fans know. I was very, very close with him. He was basically a contributor to my old blog at the Star Tribune, Russo's Rants, because he essentially every single day would say something inevitably that was so funny or so colorful that I made it almost a centerpiece on my blog at the Strib. And, it was just a devastating night when I found out that he passed away. And I had a report on that story for the Star Tribune. Well, it's been 10 years. I talked to his brothers, Ryan and Aaron, his sister, Kristen, his mom, Joanne, and his dad, Len, for this story. And it's sort of a story about, what they feel was the real Bougard, but also what happened to him the last couple of years and how he went from somebody that was this, just loving, great guy to somebody that started to almost self-medicate with opioids and alcohol. And then we find out months later after he died that he had a real advanced version of CTE and was the beginning of major brain damage that could have really affected him if he was still alive today, devastatingly. So it's a story of how he became the boogeyman, but it's a story about just how much his family doesn't want him to be forgotten, how much they absolutely loved him, and they tried to give a glimpse of what the real boogeyman was, the person that I got to know. And that was just a great, great guy. And, somebody that was very, very different than sort of the tough heavyweight that intimidated and put fear into his opponents on the ice. But, just a tremendous guy. And I hope that everybody gets that sense when they read this Derek Bougard story in today's Athletic. Again, and if you're not a subscriber, you can go to theathletic.com/straightfromthesource and get in and read all these stories, especially with the playoffs coming up here. I think that, there's been a lot of heavy stories lately in The Athletic written by me. It'll be really cool if I can write some happy stories here coming up, and maybe that will have to do with the Wild actually being successful in the postseason. Without further ado, though, let's hear from the architect of the team that's going into the postseason, the general manager of the Minnesota Wild, Billy Guerin. And as mentioned at the top of the show, USA Hockey Hall of Famer, also the assistant GM for the USA Olympic hockey team. Hopefully the NHLers will wind up in Beijing next year. But most importantly, the most impressive stat that Billy Guerin has, besides your Stanley Cups and your 400-something goals, Billy, is you had 10 hat tricks in your career, but the most in NHL history for most teams. You had seven different teams that you had hat tricks on, if that makes all sense. Except for the Pittsburgh Penguins, though, shockingly enough.
Yeah, Crosby never passed enough. So I was never able to get one there.
you got a couple cups, though. Four total, but a couple as a player. I'm sure you take the cups over the hat tricks.
The cups over the hat trick, yep. Yeah. Yeah, so, absolutely. So it's pretty funny, actually, on that. It was 1 year, when I played here in St. Louis, I scored a hat trick against San Jose. And then San Jose traded for me. And then I scored a hat trick later that season for them.
Against St. Louis, right?
No, it was against Chicago.
Okay.
But it was the one and only time I got a penalty shot in my career for a hat trick goal.
Wow. That's pretty neat.
Yeah.
By the way, cool. I've got to tell you, I never knew that St. Louis could look so good. I love the background of your hotel room there. So.
Yeah, it's pretty cool. I got a great view of the arch. It's really neat.
Yeah, that's pretty awesome. So really exciting news, just as we were starting to record this podcast, is that the NHL has put out alternate schedules for the playoffs. Obviously, by the time this podcast is out, Billy, we'll know, or we won't know yet, we'll know in a couple of hours after this podcast is out, who you're playing in the first round of the playoffs. But either way, you guys start on Sunday afternoon on NBC, whether it's in Vegas or Colorado. Tonight's game, how you know, you've been in this situation where you suit up and it's a meaningless game. You know that you're locked in third. It's not up to you who you play. How difficult is that for a player to play a game like tonight?
Yeah, it's definitely a weird spot for the players to be in, because you're definitely looking ahead at this point in time. You're looking towards the playoffs. You're looking towards, you know, something bigger. You don't want to really, I mean, it's a little more difficult when there's nothing to play for. I do think when the puck is dropped, the guys, you know, their natural competitiveness comes to the forefront and they play hard, but, it definitely has a different tone in the game.
Do you, as a GM tonight, I mean, do you almost hold your breath with every hit, with every block shot, with every, you know, I mean, the goal tonight, I'm sure, is obviously to play well and to get a victory, but the real goal is to get out healthy, right?
Yeah, we want to make sure everybody gets out healthy, and, you know, we just want to make sure that the guys get what they need to be prepared for the playoffs, and, you know, that's the bottom line, but the player's health is first and foremost.
Obviously the I think we get Dean today at 5, and this podcast should be released right around then. Are you able to kind of give us a glimpse of what the plan is for tonight? If you'll call up any taxi squad guys or put in Hunt or Parisi?
Yeah. Some guys are going to get an opportunity from the taxi squad. I believe Hunts and Zach are both in. So it'll be a good opportunity for everybody.
Can you say who you'll take out?
I guess I could. But I'm not going to.
Okay. We'll find out at 5 o'clock.
Be a little more patient with.
Yep. If you pull guys out though, is it because they're banged up, or is it just to protect certain assets?
No, it's just precautionary. Yep. I think just, you know what, there's no reason, and it's just give guys an extra day of rest too. Mm-hmm. You know, we're gonna be going every other day here, and not that that's really different from what we've been doing for the last few months, but. You know, things just ramp up during the playoffs. So, you know, if we can give guys an extra day of rest, then that's what we'll do.
What do you make of last night's game, Billy? Tons of chances offensively. It felt like in your own zone, you were a little probably too loose. Some, you know, obvious missed assignments that probably are easily correctable. But but I'm sure that you weren't overly delighted with the loss.
No, I mean, you never are. And you know, I think there are times in the year where you really just have to have you got to give the guys a little bit of a break, you know, and not be too hard on them. Look, at last night could have gone either way. We had some grade A chances like early on in the game where I really think we could have been up 3-0. Mm-hmm. And their goalie played fantastic and had some you know, made some great saves early. And I think your assessment's right. We were extremely loose in the defensive zone. It didn't seem like we were really engaged in there. So I'm sure Cam was really frustrated too. That's what we were kind of saying last night, that if he's pissed off, he should be, because we didn't really help him much. But that being said, like right now, like let's just put that behind us and you know, focus on tonight, and then we'll focus on you know, our first round matchup. So, you know, we just got to try to stay positive, even though we didn't play great last night.
Yeah. Let's talk about your first round matchup. It's almost like, be careful what you wish for, right? I mean, if you get by the first round, you're probably going to run into that other team in the second round. So you're in a tough, tough division with these two teams that you're going to probably have to face here in the first round. But I'm sure that, look, that's what you expected when you wound up in this division to begin with, that you were going to have to go through these teams.
Yeah. Yeah. You can't try to pick your opponent, and you know, we don't wish for one team over the other. It's we're going to play a good team, and you know what, if we're fortunate enough to advance, then we're going to play another good team, and it's going to keep on going. You know, when you get to the playoffs, you just don't play weak teams. That's the bottom line. Mm-hmm. And we knew it going in. We have a very strong division. You know, the teams at the top are two of the best in the league. And then, you know, St. Louis is, you know, I mean, as we saw last night, they have so many guys on that team from their Stanley Cup team. They know how to play in big games. They know how to get ready. You know, they've had a different type of year. It's been kind of weird for them.
Yeah.
They're a very good team.
I agree with you.
And you know what, I who knows what's going to happen in the first round. So I think the four teams that are in the playoffs are all deserving of it. And I think the first round matchups are going to be great.
Yeah. Would it be wrong if you play Vegas in the first round, don't you think I should maybe go tomorrow, pre-scout the city for a little bit?
You probably should.
Yeah, I think so as well.
Maybe. Yeah, you always need a little extra time to do good scouting.
Yep, get adjusted to the time zone and the dry the dry air and all that type of stuff.
There is the time stand still in Vegas, right?
Exactly.
Leave your watch at home.
Yep, exactly. I got to ask you about, I know that you, like, sometimes I ask Dean about Kaprizov, and you're just like, or all of us ask Dean about Kaprizov, and you can almost see in his face, like, again, you know, I gotta, you know, sing this guy's praises, but I do want to ask you about him. I mean, you know, like, I remember talking to you before the season started, and we're talking about Kaprizov and, you know, leveling down expectations, and there's going to be an adjustment and all that type of stuff. And You never really do know, Bill, like, how a guy is going to come over here and adjust, even though he's a seasoned pro at this point from the KHL. But you've just got to be, you know, overwhelmingly excited about the way that it almost feels like mid-season he just said, you know what, screw it, I could be a star in this league. I don't need to just tread water anymore, and he just took off.
Yeah, I mean, of course, I'm thrilled with the way he's come over and acclimated to, you know, to life in the NHL. I think it's, you know, I think it's been great for him. It's been great for us, great for our fan base. And yeah, we all want to find, you know, diamonds in the rough like this when we're sitting at the draft table. And Kirill, you know, the wait's been worth it. You know, he's been producing. He's had a tremendous year. Everything's gone really, really well, and hopefully he can continue that. And you know, he's a great kid. His teammates love him. He's been a great, great addition to the team. Like, he really has.
It almost feels like he, you know, he gives you guys that element that this team has historically lacked, Bill. I mean, I remember, like, to me, the final straw for me was in 2018, and when the Wild lost to Winnipeg in the first round, and that core that the Wild tried to build with for many, many years to take this team to another level, they sort of failed again. I mean, Coyle, Niederreiter, Zucker didn't have a point in that postseason round against Winnipeg, where now all of a sudden you guys come in and you're this deep, balanced team with a couple game breakers, an incredible line centered by Erickson Ek. It just feels like there's lots of different elements of this team that could be the beginning of something that's a perennial contender.
Yeah, I think we have some, you know, I mean, hey, look, I like all our players, and I think you're right. I think our depth is something that's really been a positive thing for us. We have four lines that, you know, anytime you throw one of our lines out there, you're never worried about them. Like, there's, you know, different elements to each line, but You know, we're comfortable with each one of them. We have good depth. We can play against anybody. And I think that's a nice thing to have, you know, to have a couple, in having Kirill and having Kevin, kind of be these young and upcoming offensive stars is great. You know, the play from Eriksson Ek, Foligno and Greenway's line has been unbelievable. Zuccarello's had a good bounce back year. There's a lot of positive things. You know, Brodes is having a really good year, his best offensive year ever. And I just, you know, there are a lot of positives. That being said, you know, we've had a great year. We've had a really good regular season. The true test of where we are is going to be now. It's the playoffs. You know what? We've made a little bit of noise, and I think opened some eyes during the regular season. But coming up, this is when it really happens. This is when, if you want to make your mark and if you want to say, you know, we've kind of arrived, this is the time to do it.
Yep. That makes absolute sense, and I know Wild fans would be absolutely loving that, Bill. Let me ask you, you mentioned how, you alluded to the fact that you don't worry about what line's out there. You know, similarly, I've got to think that you feel that same way about your blue line. I think that you identified in training camp that you really wanted to stabilize that third defense pair. A couple games into the season, after the first game of the season, in fact, you actually, during this podcast, was when you were making the Ian Cole trade. Didn't give us the scoop on the podcast, I might add. But nope. I think you did get a phone call from Joe Sakic that I think he sent to voicemail, you said, during the podcast. But remember, you were out in Anaheim when we did that podcast.
Yep.
Just on it.
Yep, absolutely.
But I mean, you really think of the way that Ian Cole has fit in like a glove, Billy, and really put you in a position where, you know, I think Carson Soucy now looks like he could play a long time in this league. And now if Dean's in that position where all of a sudden, you know, you ice the puck and McKinnon's line comes out there or Mark Stone's line comes out there and Cole and Soucy are out there, you're not freaking out that your third pair is out on the ice against those type of players.
Yeah, no, we definitely are not. And you know, Cole's been great for our team. You know, just he's a real big culture guy. You know, and he's really stabilized that third pair. He's helped Seuss out quite a bit. And, you know, with so few people in the arena, you can really hear the chatter that goes on the ice. And, and Colsey's really helped, Carson by just talking to him on the ice, letting him know who's coming, if he's got time, you know, where to put the puck, things like that. And they've become a really good pair for us. And, you know, it's super important. You know, especially with the teams that we could possibly be facing. And yeah, that's going to happen too. Like there's going to be an icing. They're going to be out on the ice against some of the top lines. And we're really comfortable with that.
Yeah, absolutely. By the way, I wanted to thank you from the beat writer's perspective. Both Dane, Sarah, and myself want to thank you for all the new guys that you put on this team because they're all like absolute quote machines.
They're
them.
Pretty good.
Every one of them, like Cole, Johansson, Bonino, Talbot, Bukestad. I mean, they're all just great quotes. And that's, you know, as you know, Billy, that's the most important thing about a hockey player.
Yeah, well, for sure. And you know what? I do think it says something to their character. They've always got time.
Mm-hmm.
You know what? They're good. They're good guys. They're good people. They're, they give time back to the media, which is important. I think, they're not afraid of it. They answer to it when they're not playing well, and they'll be available for you. So I appreciate when they do that.
In a super, super tough year too, Billy, right? I mean, it can't be fun for these guys to every day have to be dragged to a Zoom video. And also know that, you know, like a lot of times when you shoot the breeze with a player in the locker room, you know, not everything's broadcast to the world. Now it's like, you know, you've got to make sure that you're saying exactly the right thing or like one little slip up becomes a viral thing.
Yeah, I mean, these Zoom things are just, for everybody, it's just getting old. You want some good old fashioned human interaction, you know, to talk face to face to somebody. And, you know, I, I think it's probably right around the corner, but
yeah.
I mean, the guys are doing as best they can. I know everybody's, I know you guys are too. It's just, you know, everybody would love to be back in you know, press rooms and locker rooms and stuff like that, but it's they've all done as well as they can.
Funny. I'm smiling, Billy, because I remember when we were shooting The Breeze a couple of weeks ago, we were talking about those old Pittsburgh locker rooms where, you know, the reporters would sort of huddle around you or Maxime Talbot and just laugh their ass off, just listening to you guys chat. And that's the type of stuff that you miss. I wrote this story today, Billy, on Bugard, and that's what I used to love about him. I used to go up to his stall and honestly lean against the wall and just have my notepad in my back pocket, not even out, and inevitably something hilarious would come up. And the next thing you know, you're writing it down. It turned out to be a really fun story.
Yeah, well, I think too, that's where, you know, not just for quotes and things like that, I think that's where the relationships are growing.
Absolutely.
And you get to know each other. And, you know, I think it's really important for the players to have a good relationship with the, you know, the media and be available to them and have some level of trust. And I think that's something that you can really only do in person. I mean, it's much harder to build those relationships when you're, you know, just stuck on a Zoom call all the time. It's just the way we are.
You know? Yeah. It's very, very difficult. Let me ask you, Matt Boldy has gotten off to a great start in his professional career down in Iowa. Seems to be scoring every night, multiple points every night. How excited are you with the start to his career and getting up here potentially for the playoffs?
Yeah, I'm excited. I'm happy for Matt. He's done very well. You know, it's another step in the right direction for him, you know, career wise. And, you know, I'm sure a lot of fans would really love to have seen him these last couple games, but you know, I feel it's best for him to just, you know what, stay put, stay where he is, continue to have success, continue to play big minutes and produce down there. And, you know, Matt's time will come. You know, it will definitely come. He's going to play in the NHL. He's going to play for us. But the last thing we want to do is just force feed him. And, you know, we the other thing is too, like, we have a lot of guys that have been here all year and haven't really got to play a lot of hockey. And we're thinking of them too. You know, mm-hmm. they've been really important pieces this year. And they're like our taxi squad guys have had an unbelievable attitude. You know, they have done such a spectacular job for us that, you know, they, you know, if there's a chance to get them in like there is tonight, you know, they deserve it.
Yeah. 6 goals, 9 assists. So 15 points and 12 games there. And we talked about a little bit a couple of weeks ago, Billy, is that really is a thing. Like, I think Wild fans, you know, they obviously have a reason that they wanted to see Boldy in the lineup, but if all of a sudden you're pulling guys from the lineup for no reason and putting this rookie in, it one puts the kid in an awkward position, but it really could create an uncomfortable dimension in that locker room that sometimes you do have to avoid. I mean, obviously if you had injuries, that's a different story, but
yeah,
but that's probably what you were thinking as well.
Yeah, 100%. I mean, you know, we're you know, knock on wood, we're healthy. And like I said, there are guys that aren't playing right now that are ready to go, and they have been ready to go. So, you know, how's it going to look if we bring Matt up and just stick him in there? You know, hey guys, they're human, you know, they're competitive. They want to play too. So I just think right now it just, you know what, listen, I you can look at other teams, you can look at, you know, his peers and all that stuff playing in the league and, you know, getting their games. And you know what, that's a different situation. Those are different teams. They have different thought process. They have different roster issues. We're worried about what's best for Matt Boldy. We're worried about what's best for the Minnesota Wild. And that's it. I'm not concerned about what other players, what other guys in his peer group are doing. I'm worried about his situation with us.
Right. And Billy's obviously talking about guys like Krebs and Newhook and and players like that. One of the players, Billy, that also is waiting to get in that you mentioned is playing tonight is Zach Parise. You know, I know that a lot of this stuff has to be kept in house, but you're a former player that, you know, you're one of those guys, by the way, that I just noticed, you didn't have it down last year. You scored 20. You're one of those guys that could go out and say, I scored 20 plus goals my last year in the National Hockey League, which is pretty neat. But how much sympathy do you have, you know, for Zach and players like this? We saw Getzlaff scratch the other night. You know, that's happened a lot this year.
Yeah, we've seen it around the league, and, I have a lot of sympathy for him, and it's not an easy thing, and it's a crappy decision for us to make, and it's a crappy situation for him to be in. And I mean, I've been there, and it's just not great. And you know what? I give Zach a lot of credit. We've talked, and he's a real pro, and you know what? He just wants to help, and he wants to be a part. So, you know, I'm not going to go too far into it, but Zach's been, he's been awesome.
Looking for an assist with your credit card, but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service anytime. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/credit card.
Billy, let's see. One thing I got to ask you about is how much, like what on an everyday basis, so like, are you thinking about expansion or is it way too early? You're just focused on the playoffs right now.
It kind of goes in, stages.
Like, and holy then, crap, you know, what are we going to do?
Yeah. Like, yeah. These decisions and oh god, we could lose this guy. But then when we sit around talking about it and we realize how much time is still left, we're like, you know what, let's do something else,
right?
let's think about something that you know, we could really you know, do something about now. So we think about it, we talk about it, we have some ideas, but you know, until we really get there, we're just gonna have to be patient.
How funny is it, Billy? Like I remember even just when you first took the job and we started talking about expansion, you know, you're just like, hey, we're gonna lose one good player. That's just the way it is. And then all of a sudden, when you get into it and you realize how difficult this really is, like it could turn your brain into a pretzel when you realize, all right, well, you could see how almost like 3 years ago, 4 years ago, you saw how many GMs were put in a position where they're like, you know what, it might be better for us to make a deal with Vegas. And because you look at what you're going to want to do this year, and you might actually wind up being in the same position, Billy, where I'm not saying you're going to give up an Alex Tuch, but you might have to consider that as giving up an asset to protect guys.
Right. Yeah. And, you know, in all fairness too, Alex Tuch today was not Alex Tuch, you know, all those years ago. It was a different player. And I think it was a difficult choice that Chuck had to make. And you know what, you make your decision and then you move on. Mm-hmm. And, you know, yeah. And we're going to have to make a decision, you know, and it's going to be hard. We are, regardless of what decision we make, we are going to lose a good player. And, but we'll have to, you know, get close to it. We'll have to work through it and decide what we want to do and what our options are going to be, and then make our decision and not look back.
No, makes sense. And the media will never look back. I promise you, 2-3 years from now, we won't.
Yeah,
we won't second guess. We won't hindsight's 2020.
Exactly. Yeah, I'd like to stick some of you guys in my chair for a couple days and see what genius plans you guys come up with.
No, it's exactly right. That would be my dream.
You
know,
I love it. Just trade this guy or trade that guy or trade this guy or trade that guy, and it's like, you know what? You need somebody on the other side to want to do that too. It's just not, can't force anybody to do it. I would just love it.
Yeah, no, trust me.
I'd like your job for a couple of days.
Yeah. How funny is it? Like any media person that our job is always to be, you know, critical or analytical, you know that the second we're put in that chair, we would freaking like panic in a second. So yeah.
I remember when I first started working after hockey and I was at a game in Pittsburgh and I was sitting next to Ray Shiro, and the period was over and there was a player on our team who's really struggling. He's like, "What would you do with this guy?" I'm like, "I don't know. I think I'd probably move him." He goes, "Well, you can't trade the whole damn team." Like, you know, it just doesn't happen like that. Like, just don't move guys like it on a whim. Like, you just, I don't know. It was kind of a funny little lesson for me where you just, it's not just that easy.
Yeah, no doubt about it. Especially someone like me. I'm so impatient. I remember, who was it? I remember. It was Erickson Ek. Like, I remember, like, 4 years ago, I would have moved him for anybody. I remember, like, getting into these debates with Brent Flair about him. And here we are 4 years later, and I bet the Flyers... Well,
4 years ago, how old? I mean, yeah. How old is he? 4 years?
Yeah.
That's the thing. Like, you know, trade this guy. He doesn't get it. Trade that guy. He doesn't get it. You know, when these guys are drafted, like, go take a look at a normal everyday 18-year-old kid or 19-year-old kid or 20-year-old kid. All right. And then stick them in the National Hockey League.
Yeah.
You know, walking around town, if you see a kid, he's driving around with his buddies or whatever, he's a 19-year-old kid, you're like, oh, what a goofball, you know, like, okay. And then take that kid and he's a National Hockey League player. Like, these guys, like, a lot of time, like, they're kids.
Yeah.
And they're in a man's world and they're expected to act a certain way. It's not fair. You have to be patient with them and let them grow up a little bit. It's really tough, but it's something that you got to try your best to do.
Yeah. I remember when the Wild extended, they gave Spurgeon a 3-year deal, like either 225 or 275, I think it was. And I remember on the phone with Chuck, I'm like, what are you doing? And now he's the captain of the team. And another guy, you know, last night that I was thinking about, Billy, was watching Scandella on the ice. Scandella is another guy. I remember years ago, I'm like, I would trade that guy. And here he is 10 years later and he's still in the league. And, you know, he's had a good career. I mean, it just shows you, you gotta be patient in your role, because I'm sure there are times you walk out of the arena and you're on fire with how a player played. And if you acted on that emotion, he'd be gone by the morning, you know?
I'm an emotional guy, and there are some nights where it's just like, you're just fuming, but the best thing is to just go home and sleep on it and just wake up the next day and try to just give yourself that time to let yourself cool down and, you know, not say anything stupid or do anything stupid, but there are times where, you get frustrated because everybody's competitive, but I always try to look back to my own career too and try to remember some of the nights where I wasn't very good, or how frustrated my GMs and coaches must have been with me. And you know what? You want to grab a guy and talk to him and tell him to do this and tell him to do that. But I always think back to like my GMs. Okay. Did my GM ever say this to me? You know, no. Did he ever do this to me? No. Did he ever, you know, threaten to trade me or anything? No. Like, so those are things that I try to look back on my career that helped me kind of just take a step back and just chill out.
Didn't you say that the you know, one of the best things that you did this season was after that one Vegas game that you were really upset the team blew, is that you just left the arena and walked back to the hotel, took a stroll and chilled yourself out, and then hung out with the coaches when they got back to the hotel. But you didn't even make the trek down to the locker room after that game. You just left.
No, and to be honest with you, that's one thing that I've really liked about this year. Like when we're on the road, I don't go down to the locker room. I haven't been down to the locker room. Like tonight, it's our second game in St. Louis, so, you know, we'll be out of the hotel. And so I'll, you know, I don't have a hotel room to go back to.
Right.
So I'll go down to the coach's room and just pop my head in and say hello after. But like last night, I didn't even go down and meet with them after. what we'll do is like I'll order up some food and some beers and stuff like that, and you know the coaches will come up to my room after the game, and we'll meet up here. But by the time they get up here, it's been, you know, close to an hour since the game's been over, and they've had a chance to cool down. I've had a chance to cool down, and we can really just talk about things, you know, with a level head over a beer, and I found it really helpful, because immediately after the game, it's just too emotional. It's just not a good time, because you know Dean and I had a really good discussion. You know, we were kind of arguing about certain players and certain things, and I really think where I watch the game from, you lose a lot. You lose the emotion of the guys. It's just too easy up there. And kind of what we thought about is like Dean's focus. Dean doesn't watch the game like I do. I watch the game like a scout. So I'm picking apart each individual player. I'm seeing like system breakdowns and this and that. Dean is coaching the team. He's looking at different matchups. He's looking at PPs and PKs and all. So we're watching the game differently. So after the game, a lot of times our opinion on players and you know, and the way the team's played can be quite different. And I think that one conversation has really helped our relationship post game.
Yeah. Well, I noticed that when I covered that game in LA a couple weeks ago, Billy, and just finally being back. I don't know if I showed you where we sat, but we sat like lower bowl, like in the, you know, where the celebrities sit.
Sat there. Yeah.
And I'm telling you, like, you know, that it was just a good reminder to me that, man, the game is easy in the press box. It is slow. You see every passing lane, every shooting lane, and you just, you don't realize how little time and space these guys have to make split second decisions.
It's not really, it's not really fair.
Yeah.
It's not really fair for, that's why I love watching the games at suite level, because you're so much closer to the game. You're so much, you can see facial expressions. You can see the quickness of the game a lot more. You know, when you're way up top, it's just, you know, it's just so slow and,
yep.
Like you said, you can see all the passing lanes and, oh my God, why don't you just give it to that guy? Well, yeah, like,
what are you doing? What are you thinking?
Because you got a 6'5 defenseman that can skate bearing down on you, and he's going to, you know, you feel pressure. So sometimes you just got to take it with a grain of salt.
You know who had the best sight lines in the NHL for press box back in the day? Where you started. The Meadowlands. Jersey, do you remember where we sat?
It was amazing.
Yeah.
It was like the most expensive seats in the house.
Exactly.
And it was right behind the two team benches, right at center ice.
Like seven rows of like.
It was incredible.
Yeah. Like of revenue just thrown out. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. And I remember Lou used to sit there.
Yeah.
And he used to sit right on like the last row of the press area, right on the corner. And that's where he would sit.
Yeah. By the way, when you guys have these post-game get-togethers, how many times does Dean walk in the room and say, you wouldn't believe the stupid question Russo asked tonight?
We've done that. He's done that 55 times.
And there's only been 55 games. That's not good. Oh, man. Billy, let's see here. Here's a good one that you were just sort of talking to. What does an average day at the office look like? I'm sure it depends. This is from the Dogfather, by the way. What's the daily decision making consist of? What takes up your most time? You know, I'm sure that every year it's different, right? Like, I'm sure right now it's slower than it was the weeks leading into the trade deadline or the weeks leading into the season.
Yeah, it really depends on the time of year. You know, when we start up and we're getting going, we have to make sure that you know that training camp's set, rosters are set, travel's set, all those things. So we do a lot of like you know, a lot more group meetings, things like that. During the summer, there's a couple weeks where it'll be really hectic leading up to free agency and the draft. Those get really busy and they're much longer days. You know, I won't lie to you. Like right now, it's kind of slow.
Mm-hmm.
you know, as for the, like the day-to-day operations, just because where we are, there's no trades being made. There's, you know, there's just not much going on in that kind of, in that part of the job. But right now, you know what, preparing for the, you know, the travel during the playoffs, you know, we're going to have some amateur scouting meetings. We'll have some pro scouting meetings during the playoffs, and it's just really trying to look ahead. So, I mean, honestly, the hours, I could be in the office for 3 hours one day and 9 hours the next. It really depends on where we are during the season.
By the way, what has Judd Brackett's year been like? And all your scouts. I mean, this has been an odd year. I'm sure Judd just felt refreshed down to get to Texas. I assume he was there for the under-18s last couple weeks. You know, do you feel like this is going to be a very odd draft for these guys?
Yes and no. Just because, you know, the restrictions at the border, you know, the Ontario League not playing, and limited games with Quebec in the Western League. But you know what? I have such great confidence in Judd and you know, Rico Pearson and the rest of the staff. These guys just, you know what? If there's a game around, they're there. And they've worked extremely hard to make the best of a crazy situation. And Judd's awesome. And he's, you know, he's super smart. I know we're going to get a couple good players, and it has been different, but they've made the best of it. And they have been working as normal as they can.
By the way, I was talking to a buddy of mine that knows Cape Cod really well the other day. And he mentioned, he was talking to me about restaurants he loves there. And one of the ones that he mentioned was the one that was one of the two that Judd owns with his brother, I guess the Port. Famous Cape Cod place.
I heard it's wicked good.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Really good question from Lake Martin, Billy. He goes, what has been the one or two changes you've made behind the scenes that you feel have had the biggest impact on the performance of the team or the perception of the team? I mean, remember, we all thought this was going to be just this year of transition. What are the ones that you feel that you've made that might have had the impact that maybe a lot of us have almost glossed over because of our love affair for guys like Kaprizov?
Wow, that's a behind the scenes that nobody would really know. Oh boy, that's a really good question.
Yeah. Lake should be the reporter.
He's much better than you. Wow, that's a really good question. I think some of the attitude things, maybe the try to change the way we view ourselves and the way we think and the expectations of ourselves. And I don't think that's anything it wasn't like with trades or anything like that. I think it's just a, you know, nothing real tangible that you can like see or really, it's just an expectation level
thing,
and a thought process, a confidence, and things that I felt that we really needed. Like, you know, there have been some good years here and there have been some things that like real positive things that have happened over the course of 20 years in Minnesota, like great things. But I just feel we need to start thinking of ourselves on a bigger stage, on a bigger, you know, we're the premier, I've said it, we're the premier hockey market in the United States. We got to start acting like that. Right. Like so I think that's kind of,
Well said. I mean, yeah, you said last August, if we don't make changes and everything's going to stay the same, and clearly you went out and did that, Bill.
Yeah. And I think that to me was, you know, part of the attitude and the expectation, and it's no disrespect to anybody that was here, before, or, you know, players, manager, whatever. There's been a lot of great things that have happened here.
Yeah.
But it needed to change. And
yeah,
we're not there yet. We still have to get better.
Mm-hmm. This is a question. This is a comment from Kevin that I never clued. He just let me know that, and you know that you were the first dollar bill. Like he said that, he goes, ask Bill if he remembers going to Deneen's hockey school in Connecticut when you were with the Stars, and that Deneen used to start call you Dollar Bill because you signed that big contract with the Stars. I had no clue.
Yeah. Gary Deneen. Yep.
Yeah.
My mentor. Yeah. The Gary Deneen hockey school. It was the best.
That's awesome. Who knew? I always thought Dollar Bill Kirill was just only Kirill. Apparently he stole the nickname from you. Finn says, is Billy G okay that we always call him Billy G?
Yes. Yeah. Absolutely. It's so funny, but like when anybody calls me Bill, it's really weird.
Yeah.
Like my wife, if somebody calls me Bill and I answer, she'll kind of like look at me and be like, it's Billy. It's Billy. And all my friends call me Billy G. Everybody. Yeah. Like from a young age.
Couple more minutes with Billy G. Julio says, after signing Fiala, Ek, and Kaprizov, will there be any more money left for free agency and things like that? I mean, these are going to be big ticket items, right?
Yeah, it's it will be difficult.
How much has the year that Eriksson Ek has had in particular forced you guys to maybe redo your modeling? Is that fair?
Well, let me say this first. It's a good thing. This is a good thing. And with projecting out, you have to have a couple different plans, and you know, different things can determine how much a player makes. And you know, I think, you know, term is one of those. And you know, so as we go along, maybe we have to change our thinking in terms of term for the contract. And there are a lot of different things we can do. So we just have to get creative and, you know, but these are good problems to have.
Is all quiet pretty much on that front right now? Like, in other words, table it for the off season, or is that stuff still ongoing?
Yeah. Yeah. We can. Yeah. Ekki's agents, my old teammate, Claude Lemieux. So
yeah.
We can, I know how he thinks.
Yeah. Yeah.
So absolutely. Well, I'll have to wait.
Yep. He did lose one of those two, one of your RFAs. You saw that, right? Didn't Fiala have him and now he doesn't have, he now went to Newport, I think.
Yeah.
I'm sure that's a great subject. Yeah. Quoteless Jones. This is a great question from an Avs fan. The Ian Cole trade, can we have a do-over?
No.
Oh, man. Let's see. Russo Slacks wants to know what the hell is wrong with the Twins, Billy.
I don't know.
You have your hands full.
Honestly, I don't know.
Yeah.
I got my own issues.
Yeah, exactly. Just flying through here. Here's a good one. You know, John Cummings asked something that's been, you know, it's one of those players that just either love him or you hate him if you're a Wild fan, but that's Victor Rask. You know, you guys made Billy, you know, I thought Dean really said it well the other day, is that last summer, Bill, that you guys as an organization sat down and said, we've got to give this guy a chance. And clearly you've given him that chance this year. I mean, he's played, you know, with your top scorers, he's played on the number one power play, things like that. What was it about Victor last summer that made you guys say, you know what, we've got it. We're paying this guy. We might as well use him.
Well, I'll tell you what. And I'll be honest with you. I hear some of that chatter, and it bothers me.
Mm-hmm.
It bothers me because, you know, I guess he was traded for a popular player. And that's fine. But you know what? When Victor Rask got here, he had no chance. He had no chance. He was buried. They wouldn't play him, you know. And this is a guy that had 50 some odd points in the league, you know, a few years before. And you know, if you're not playing and you're not treated well, you're going to lose confidence. And you know, to be honest with you, he got dumped on for a year and a half. That's not fair. That's not right. And just to say this guy stinks, he doesn't stink. He's a damn good hockey player. He's been center on our best line for most of the year, and he's produced. And you know what? I just think the way that he was treated here at the start really affected him, like in a negative way. And Dean and I talked about it, and we're saying, you know what? Roddy Francis, who's one of the brightest hockey minds out there, gave this guy a hell of a contract, and he saw something in him. And for me, if Roddy Francis likes you, there's something there. And you could see it. You could see his skill in practice. You could see his skate. You could see his hands and playmaking ability. And we're just like, we have to get something out of this. We're paying him $4 million a year. Let's give him a shot, like a legit shot. And you know what? He's been awesome for us this year. And he's produced. He's been, you know what? When he went on our top power play unit, it turned around. And he's had a big hand in our power play being much, much better than it was at the beginning of the year. So, you know, I'm sick and tired of people, crapping on Victor Rask. He's a good hockey player, and he's done a lot of good things for the Minnesota Wild this year.
That's good stuff. I raised to ask this question, but has Greenway shown you the kind of growth and maturation that you wanted to see this year, or do you feel he's tapered off a bit?
His goal scoring has tapered off a bit. I mean, I think he's still leading our team in assists. But no, you know what? Greeny has really taken a step in his maturity, his professionalism, getting ready to play every day, not just every game day, every practice day. Working at his game. And you know what? I think we've seen it. I think we've seen the consistency. We always want more. He can always get better. And he's still young, and I think he will. But yeah, he's taken a really big step this year, and it's been awesome.
Cool. A couple fun ones to close off here. Billy, 100 Watt Jones, who's a local band in town.
Nice. Really,
yeah, yeah. If you were starting an NHL franchise and could choose any retired player in their prime as the first pick, who would it be?
Oh, my God. They're so
awesome. Yeah, I know.
I won't pick like Gretzky or Lemieux or anything. I always said this when I was playing. But like, so it's one of my peers, a guy that I played against, Peter Forsberg.
Okay. Awesome.
I love Peter. Peter Forsberg was a tough guy to play against. He had everything. Mm-hmm. You know, he had skill, he had grit. He was tough, and he could hit. And I just thought he was just a great player.
Here's a great one. Noah wants to know, Billy, do you have any hidden talents? I should get Kara on here.
Yeah, ask Kara. I've become a pretty good cook.
Have you?
Yeah. I love cooking, and I've become pretty good.
That's awesome. I still would love to see like any videos of like some of your stuff that you did with your kids during the pandemic, like the Tiger King dinner that you guys had and the things like that. That stuff would be great. Nomland asks, do you have any plans to visit your place in Ocean City, New Jersey this summer? I'll be repping my Wild gear on the boardwalk all summer. Would love to bump into you. Yeah,
absolutely. Absolutely. Nice. That's our happy place. You know, we go down as often as we can, and I love it. Can't wait for my first pork roll, egg and cheese sandwich from Blitz's.
Yeah,
it'll be the best.
Hey, one hockey question that I just found. Hockey Leaf wants to know: have you had any discussions about bringing Brendan Minnell back to a contract for next year?
Not for a couple months. I don't know what's going to happen with that situation, to be honest with you.
Okay. John W. has, how has Billy and his family adjusted to life in Minnesota? Have you gotten out to the outskirts of Minnesota yet, or that's just sort of tough during the time that we're living in now, and also the fact that you're so busy?
Yeah, I mean, we can't really... What do you mean, like the outskirts?
Like you know, out of the Twin Cities, kind of explored the state.
I mean, I've been up to like Brainerd and things like that, and, you know, but not since we've lived here. But we've gotten around the Twin Cities. We've done a lot. And I'll tell you what, we love it. We are having a blast. We love living here. We had some friends just, you know, through the hockey world that, and then, you know, friends of friends, and we've really, the whole family's adjusted well. My kids, for kind of being in and out the whole time, they absolutely love it. I there's just so much to do too. Like, you know, in this, the spring, summer and fall, the lakes are, you know, great for, you know, for boating and fishing and swimming and this and that, and then they freeze and then you can use them for that.
Yeah.
We're restaurants are great. That whole scene is awesome. We're having a blast. Like, and all my kids really, really like it. My son loves it. You know, just all the hockey stuff. My son and Darby Hendrickson's son have become good buddies. So then, you know, and then Liam's playing, he's playing in the North American League in New Mexico with for Stan Hubbard's team. And there are a bunch of Minnesota kids. He actually lives with Bob Motzkow's son. So him and Mac have become really good friends. So
that's awesome.
Now they have this whole network of friends, and it's just really cool.
Yeah. Your son's a beauty. I remember when I did that sit down with your family, I think at the St. Paul Hotel after you were hired, and we were breaking up, and I said to Liam or somebody, I'm like, can I just get like one family picture of you guys? And he looks at me, he goes, shirtless or not shirtless?
You have no idea what a beauty this kid is. It's nonstop. It's great. They're all funny.
Yeah. Dylan says, what's your go-to appetizer or drink when you're at a restaurant or a bar?
Oh, go-to drink is Tito's martini straight up with a twist. Appetizer. Well, it depends on what kind of restaurant you're at.
Yeah.
I love going out to dinner. That's one thing I've really missed. I can't wait.
Yeah. Last question. Paul wants to know, what was your brand of six pack after games?
Bud Light.
Bud Light. Nice.
Bud Light. Yeah.
Very cool.
Actually, who says it was a six pack?
Yeah. Exactly. Good point. By the way, Eric goes, does Bill, this is how much everybody in the state of hockey just wants to hang with you. You're such an everyman. Eric goes, does Bill want to hang out with me and have some lunch?
Would absolutely do that.
Yeah.
Social media.
Yeah. Yeah. Social media. You got to love it. Do you talk to these guys about social media, your players and the be wearing it because it's starting to wear me down on an everyday basis.
You know what? I used to, when I was in player development. So I, you know, like this is 10 years ago now, like, and Twitter was just starting to come out and all these different things. And we're like, we really warn the guys, like, be careful putting yourself out there. Like, you know, this is, you know, your image and, you know, but now it's just so much a part of their life that you really just got to trust them. But yeah, you know what? Don't put things out there that are going to like, you know, that are going to get you in trouble, or, you know, you don't want to just be careful getting like, you know, political or anything like that. Just be careful. Like, you know, don't, you know, we tell our kids that all the time too. You gotta watch it, because once it's out there, it's out there.
Yep. No doubt about it. No doubt about it. Hey, Billy, this was a lot of fun. I told Sicky I wouldn't keep you my normal length, so we only kept you for 55 minutes, not an hour and a half. I honestly meant to keep you lower, but you're so easy to talk to. So
it's fine. This is good. I don't mind.
Yep, I appreciate it, and this will be one podcast where I'm pretty positive you didn't make a trade during it. So,
yeah,
unlike the last time you were on. So, by the way, Billy's not the only general manager in the Hockey League on an Athletic podcast this week. Doug Wilson, the GM of the San Jose Sharks, will be Scott Burnside and Pierre LeBrun's guest on the Two Man Advantage edition of the Athletic Hockey Show that was actually came out yesterday. Former Canuck Eddie Lack joins Craig Custance on the Full 60. Thursday at The Athletic, and check out our comments section for each podcast episode, The Athletic app, and rate and subscribe it straight from the source on Apple. If you aren't already a subscriber, go to theathletic.com/straight from the source and receive a subscription for just $3.99 per month. Final prediction, Billy, am I going to see you in Denver this weekend or Vegas?
I'm not making that. You know what? If I don't want to, I'm not answering that question. No prediction.
Yep. Thanks, Billy.
Thanks, Mike.